ever wish there was like a simpler way to, you know, find some inner peace in this crazy world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today's deep dive just might have the answer.
Okay.
We're exploring chapter 12 of the Bhagavad Gita.
Okay.
A text that's all about bhakti yoga.
Right.
The yoga of devotion.
Yeah.
You might think ancient scriptures have nothing to do with our lives today, but trust me, this chapter is surprisingly relevant.
What's fascinating is that the Gita sets this idea of, you know, finding peace through devotion against the backdrop of a war.
Oh, wow.
It's a conversation between Arjuna, a warrior facing a serious moral dilemma, and Krishna, who guides him towards a path of inner strength, even amidst chaos.
So it's like finding a source of calm in the middle of a hurricane, right?
Exactly.
So to kick things off, Arjuna poses a question many of us might ponder.
Okay.
What's the best way to connect with the divine?
Right.
Is it better to focus on the unmanifested, that formless universal energy, or a more personal manifested form of God?
That's the core of the two paths of devotion. The unmanifested is like trying to grasp the vastness of the cosmos.
Okay.
While the manifested could be connecting with a specific deity or even a quality you admire.
Hmm.
The Gita, through Krishna, says both are valid, but for many, having a personal focus makes it easier to cultivate that devotion.
It's like having a role model, someone to inspire you on your journey.
Right.
But doesn't limiting yourself to just one form restrict your understanding of the divine?
That's a valid concern.
Yeah.
However, the Gita doesn't say you have to stick to just one form forever. Think of it as a stepping stone.
Mm.
As your understanding deepens, you might find yourself drawn to different aspects of the divine.
So it's more about finding an entry point, something that resonates with you right now.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But chapter 12 doesn't stop at just choosing a form to focus on. It delves deeper into the qualities of a true devotee.
Right.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because it's not just about rituals or outward practices. It's about cultivating certain inner qualities.
Exactly. The Gita highlights qualities like compassion, humility, and resilience, which are actually super relevant to our daily lives.
Okay, let's unpack this. How can these ancient qualities help us navigate the challenges of modern life?
Well, take compassion, for example. Krishna describes it as absence of malice towards all beings. In our everyday lives, this could mean choosing understanding over anger when dealing with a difficult coworker, or simply lending a listening ear to a friend in need.
So it's about shifting our perspective.
Yeah.
Responding with kindness even when it's tough.
Mm.
It sounds a bit like that saying, kill them with kindness.
Right.
But with genuine compassion, not passive aggression.
Precisely. And then there's humility, described as freedom from egotism. In a world obsessed with self-promotion, this quality can be a game changer.
So how do we cultivate humility without becoming doormats or losing our sense of self-worth?
It's not about diminishing yourself. It's about recognizing that we're all part of something bigger than ourselves. It's about acknowledging our strengths without letting our ego inflate, and learning from our mistakes without getting bogged down by them.
Okay.
It's about being open to learning from others, regardless of their status or background.
It's about approaching life with a beginner's mind.
Right.
Always eager to learn and grow.
Exactly.
But what about resilience? How does that fit into the modern world?
Think about all the challenges we face.
Mm-hmm.
From work deadlines to relationship issues to global uncertainties.
Yeah.
The Gita talks about steadfastness in yoga, which can be interpreted as developing that inner strength to face these challenges with courage and grace.
So it's not about avoiding difficulties. It's about developing the tools to navigate them.
Exactly. Resilience isn't about becoming immune to pain or hardship.
Okay.
It's about developing the capacity to bounce back, to learn from our experiences, and to keep moving forward even when things get tough.
That's a powerful message, especially in a world that often feels overwhelming. But how do we actually cultivate these qualities? Is it just about reading the Gita and hoping it rubs off on us?
Not quite. It's about taking those insights and applying them to our daily lives.
Okay.
It's about making conscious choices moment by moment to embody those qualities. It's a practice, not a one-time fix.
So it's like building a muscle.
Right.
The more we exercise these qualities, the stronger they become.
Exactly.
But where do we even begin?
The beauty of it is opportunities are everywhere.
Wow.
Every interaction, every challenge, every moment of joy or sorrow is a chance to practice these qualities.
So instead of getting frustrated when someone cuts us off in traffic, we can choose compassion. And remember, they might be having a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of letting a work setback derail us, we can tap into resilience and look for the lesson in the experience.
That's the idea.
Okay.
It's about shifting our focus from reacting to consciously responding, from being swept away by our emotions to choosing how we want to show up in the world.
That's a powerful shift in perspective.
Right.
So it's not just about reading ancient texts. It's about taking that wisdom and making it our own.
Exactly. It's about bringing those teachings to life.
Okay.
Making them relevant and applicable to our modern experiences.
This has been incredibly insightful.
Mm.
We've explored the two paths of devotion
and
how cultivating specific qualities can actually help us navigate our daily lives.
Right.
But before we move on, I want to touch on one more key point from chapter 12. The idea that this path is open to everyone.
That's a crucial message. The Gita emphasizes that anyone, regardless of their background, past mistakes, or current circumstances, can embrace the path of devotion.
So it's about breaking down barriers.
Yes.
Saying that spirituality isn't reserved for a select few,
right,
but is accessible to everyone.
Absolutely. It's about recognizing the inherent potential for goodness within each of us, regardless of our perceived flaws or shortcomings.
I love that message of inclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reminder that we all have the capacity for connection.
Yeah.
For growth.
Right.
For finding that inner peace we're all seeking.
Exactly.
But how do we actually put this into practice?
Right.
How do we cultivate devotion amidst the demands of modern life? Let's dive into that in the next part of our deep dive.
You know, it's interesting how we often compartmentalize spirituality, thinking it's something separate from our daily lives.
Yeah.
But chapter 12 suggests that true devotion permeates every aspect of our being.
That makes me think of the saying, practice what you preach.
Right.
But how do we actually bridge that gap between spiritual ideals and the nitty-gritty reality of our day-to-day experiences?
Let's take the example of work.
Okay.
We've already talked about qualities like compassion and humility.
Right.
How can those help us navigate the often stressful world of deadlines, office politics, and that never-ending to-do list?
It sounds like a tall order, especially when you're facing a demanding boss or dealing with a frustrating project.
Mm-hmm.
How do we stay centered and embody those qualities when we're feeling the pressure?
Remember that idea of equanimity we touched on earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Krishna describes it as being the same in success and failure.
Okay.
This doesn't mean we become indifferent to our work,
right,
but rather that we don't get overly attached to outcomes.
So it's about finding that balance between striving for excellence and not letting our self-worth be completely defined by external success or failure.
Exactly.
How do we practically apply this idea to our work lives?
Imagine you're working on a big project. You've put in your off. All but things don't go as planned.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of spiraling into self-doubt or blaming others, you can approach the situation with a sense of equanimity.
Okay.
Acknowledge the disappointment.
Yeah.
Learn from the experience and move forward without letting it crush your spirit.
So it's about reframing challenges as opportunities for growth, not defining moments of our worth.
Right.
It's like that quote from the Stoic philosopher Epictetus. It's not what happens to you, but how you react to it that matters.
Exactly. And equanimity also applies to success.
Oh.
Let's say you receive a promotion or recognition for your work.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of letting your ego inflate,
okay,
you can acknowledge the achievement with humility,
right?
Recognizing that it was a team effort and that there's always more to learn and grow.
It's about maintaining that evenness of mind, not getting too high with the highs or too low with the lows.
Exactly.
This sounds great in theory,
but
how do we actually cultivate this kind of equanimity when we're in the thick of it dealing with those intense emotions that inevitably arise?
Chapter 12 offers a few practical techniques.
Okay.
Krishna talks about controlling the senses and fixing the mind on me.
Hmm.
In our modern context, we can translate this to practices like mindfulness and meditation.
So it's about training our minds, developing that ability to observe our thoughts and emotions without getting swept away by them.
Right.
Is there a specific way to do this, or are there various methods we can explore?
There are countless techniques from traditional meditation practices to modern mindfulness apps.
Wow.
The key is to find something that resonates with you and commit to regular practice.
So it's like building any new habit. It takes consistency and effort.
Mm-hmm.
But let's move beyond the workplace.
Okay.
How can these principles of devotion and equanimity help us navigate our personal relationships? After all, that's where things can get really messy.
You're absolutely right. Relationships are often our biggest teachers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Think about how often we get attached to specific outcomes with our loved ones.
Hmm.
We want them to behave a certain way
and
make us happy to fulfill our expectations.
And when those expectations aren't met, It can lead to disappointment, resentment, even anger.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the idea of detachment, which Krishna talks about,
right,
apply to these situations?
It's not about becoming emotionally distant or withdrawing from our loved ones. True detachment, as described in the Gita, is about loving deeply while letting go of our need to control them.
Mm-hmm.
It's about accepting them for who they are, flaws and all.
That sounds challenging, especially when we see our loved ones making choices we disagree with or behaving in ways that hurt us.
Right.
How do we reconcile this idea of detachment with our natural desire to protect those we care about?
It's a delicate balance.
Yeah.
We can express our concerns, offer support, and set healthy boundaries without trying to force them to change or fit into our mold.
It's about recognizing that they have their own journey, their own lessons to learn, and we can't control their path.
Exactly. And this principle of detachment can also be incredibly helpful in dealing with loss and heartbreak.
This is where it gets really hard.
Yeah.
How can detachment possibly ease the pain of losing someone we love?
It's not about denying the pain or pretending we don't care.
Okay.
It's about recognizing that everything in life is impermanent, even our relationships.
So it's about appreciating the time we have with our loved ones, cherishing the memories,
mm-hmm.
but also accepting that eventually all things must end.
Precisely.
Right.
By letting go of our clinging to permanence,
yeah,
we can find a deeper sense of peace even in the face of loss.
Mm-hmm.
We can allow ourselves to grieve fully, knowing that love transcends physical presence.
That's a beautiful way to look at it.
Yeah.
So whether we're dealing with work stress, relationship challenges, or the inevitable ups and downs of life,
right,
these principles from Chapter 12 offer a powerful roadmap for navigating those experiences with greater grace and resilience.
Absolutely. And remember, it's a continuous practice.
Mm-hmm.
We'll stumble, we'll get attached, we'll forget these principles at times.
Right.
But the key is to keep coming back.
Yeah.
To keep practicing, to keep striving to embody these qualities in our daily life.
It's a journey, not a destination.
Exactly.
And I think that's a perfect segue into our final thoughts on Chapter 12. Let's explore what it means to truly live a life of devotion in the modern world. We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive.
Yeah.
We've explored the two paths of devotion, unpacked those essential qualities outlined in Chapter 12,
right,
and looked at how we can actually apply these ancient principles to our modern lives,
mm-hmm.
from work to relationships and everything in between.
It's remarkable how these teachings written centuries ago still hold so much wisdom for us today.
Mm-hmm.
The core message is that devotion isn't just about religious rituals or grand gestures.
Okay.
It's about cultivating a certain way of being in the world.
It's about those small everyday choices,
yeah.
those moments where we choose compassion over judgment, patience over frustration,
right.
and equanimity over getting swept away by the emotional roller coaster of life.
Exactly. And it's about recognizing that this path of devotion is accessible to everyone,
yeah.
regardless of background or belief system.
Right.
The Gita doesn't discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
It simply offers a roadmap for cultivating inner peace and living a more meaningful life.
It's a roadmap that encourages us to embrace the complexities of life with an open heart and a steady mind.
Yeah.
But here's a question I've been pondering.
Okay.
In a world that's constantly pushing us towards external validation,
well, yeah,
towards achieving more, acquiring more,
mm-hmm.
how do we reconcile this with the idea of detachment that Krishna emphasizes?
That's a crucial question.
Yeah.
It's not about rejecting ambition or success altogether.
Okay.
It's about shifting our perspective,
mm-hmm.
recognizing that true fulfillment doesn't come from external achievements alone,
right.
but from aligning our actions with our values and cultivating inner peace.
So it's about finding that sweet spot between striving for excellence and not letting our self-worth be completely defined by those external markers of success.
Exactly.
It's about enjoying the journey, not just fixating on the destination.
Precisely. Think of it like this.
Okay.
You can still pursue your goals, work hard, and achieve great things.
Mm.
But you do so without that desperate clinging to outcomes.
Okay.
You detach from the need for constant external validation and find contentment in the process itself.
That's a powerful shift in mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think of those artists or musicians who create simply for the joy of creation, not for fame or fortune.
Right, right.
Their passion shines through because it's not driven by external pressures.
That's a great analogy. And when we approach life with that sense of detachment,
yeah.
we free ourselves from so much unnecessary suffering.
Okay.
We can celebrate successes without letting them inflate our ego.
Mm-hmm.
And we can navigate setbacks without letting them crush our spirit.
So it's about finding that inner balance, that unshakable center, regardless of what life throws our way.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about responding to the challenges and joys of life with grace, wisdom, and a deep sense of connection to something greater than ourselves.
Beautifully put. And remember, this is a lifelong practice.
Yeah.
There's no finish line, no point where we suddenly become perfect devotees.
Mm-hmm.
It's about showing up each day,
right,
making conscious choices, mm-hmm, and continually striving to embody these qualities in our thoughts, words, and actions.
So for our listeners who are feeling inspired to bring a little more bhakti into their lives, what's one practical step they can take starting today?
Start with small acts of kindness and compassion.
Okay.
Hold the door open for someone.
Yeah.
Offer them a genuine compliment.
Right.
Listen attentively to a friend in need. Mm. These small gestures may seem insignificant, but they have the power to ripple outward, creating a more loving and harmonious world around us.
Those are great suggestions.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to remember that self-compassion is key.
Absolutely.
We're all on this journey together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to stumble, to make mistakes, to have those moments where we forget these principles.
Yeah.
The important thing is to keep coming back, to keep practicing, and to trust the process.
Absolutely. Be kind to yourself. Be patient with yourself. And remember that even the smallest steps in the direction of devotion can make a profound difference in your life and in the lives of those around you.
That's a beautiful reminder.
Yeah.
And on that note, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive into chapter 12 of the Bhagavad Gita.
Right.
It's been a fascinating exploration of how these ancient teachings can guide us towards a more fulfilling and meaningful life in the modern world.
Thank you for joining us on this journey.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
We hope you've gained some valuable insights and feel inspired to bring a little more bhakti into your own life, one conscious choice at a time.